On case 13-910, State of Ohio versus James Tate II, for the appellant, Mr. Price.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is James Price. I'm Assistant Prosecuting Attorney for Cuyahoga County, Ohio, representing the appellant. Your Honors, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. In this case, Your Honor, the Court of Appeals holding was that there was not sufficient evidence, circumstantial or otherwise, that Mr. Tate was the man referenced in the testimony of the victims, the victim and her two friends. In reading the Court of Appeals opinion, one would never know that the person shown interacting with the females in a library security video was identified as James Tate. Actually, that James Tate identified himself as being the person in the security video from the library.
I'm sorry, could you move your microphone up so we can hear you better?
Shown interacting with the females at the library.
Would you call this a technical problem, Mr. Price? This is a situation where there was no in-court identification of the defendant, correct? I mean, the prosecutor did not ask a witness, is that individual in the courtroom today, and is with the witness identifying the person in the courtroom as the defendant, correct?
Your Honor, the prosecutor did not ask the victim or her two friends to identify the accused in court. They're minors. It was a bench trial. In addition, the defendant's family was sitting in the gallery, and they were understandably upset, intimidated by the situation.
Are you saying that's why the prosecutor didn't ask for an in-court identification in consideration of the victim's feelings here?
Well, Your Honor, I'm saying that is what I learned from the prosecutor. There's not anything in the record.
All right, let's stick to the record here. There was no in-court identification. Is that fatal?
There was.
There was a question.
There was in-court
identification. It was in a cross-examination. Tate's attorney asked this witness, after you got in the library, was Mr. Tate, the defendant, in the library also?
Correct.
Are you conceding that's not an in-court?
No, I'm saying that I hadn't answered the question yet.
Okay.
But
sorry.
I'm saying that there was, thank you, Your Honor, there was in-court identification from four different detectives. Now, Detective 1, Detective Beast, went to the library and had flyers that the defendant had given to the females outside the libraries.
Counsel, before you go down that long list there, I guess the thing that really troubles me about this case is the State's Exhibit 21, was it admitted into evidence?
Yes.
Well, on State's Exhibit 21, didn't Mr. Tate admit that he asked the young lady for sex?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. So,
how in the world can we say he wasn't identified at that trial court hearing then?
I don't think we can say that, Your Honor. The problem here is...
Please help me, because I don't see a problem.
Well, that the Court of Appeals did not address that in its opinion. If one were to merely look at the Court of Appeals opinion, you would never know that Tate entered an admission that he was the person in the video. So,
well, identity was not an issue in the case, was
no,
it?
No, it was not. It was
but
not.
But it's an element of the crime. I mean, this is,
correct.
I think that's the part of concern to the Court of Appeals. You didn't have an official question of a witness asking, is this the person we're referring to? And just as venue and all the elements of the crime must be proven by the state, so must identity.
That's correct, Your
Honor.
Isn't
that why we're here today?
That's why we're here today. The problem I see in this opinion is that the Court of Appeals cites its own holdings in State versus Melton, which says that in-court identification is not required or is not fatal to the state's case where the circumstances of the trial show that the accused is the person who is being testified about in trial. And it sounds like they're saying circumstantial evidence, but they're not. They're saying the circumstances of the trial show.
Are we back to an error correction of the 8th District Court of Appeals, or does this transcend that to a legal
issue? I think
it
transcends that, Your Honor, because if it were error correction, we would see some evidence in the opinion that they took the evidence into consideration. But in this case, they're saying there was absolutely no evidence, circumstantial or otherwise, that the person in court was the person, that the accused was the person about whom the witnesses were testifying.
So if we agreed with your position, do we send it back to the 8th District Court of Appeals and tell them to look at this evidence and re-argue the case?
Or? Well, Your Honor, since they made this determination sua sponte, it wasn't in response to a specific assignment of error. I think, unfortunately,
identity was not raised by the defendant in the appeal.
No, Your Honor. So I believe that the case would have to be sent back for the 8th District to look at the appellant's 6 assignments of error. They did address the.
But we do let appellate courts raise issues sua sponte. We don't want to interfere with that prerogative, do we?
It's my understanding, Your Honor, from this court's prior holdings, that is appropriate, but it's also appropriate for a court of appeals to notify the parties that it is going to raise an issue sua sponte, so the state or the defendant doesn't come into the court of appeals ill prepared to address the court of appeals concerns.
Was this part of the oral argument before the 8th District?
This particular issue?
Yes.
No.
Counsel, no. You raised the question of why are we here today? We're here today because you asked us to take your case, and for the life of me, I'm having difficulty understanding why we did, because as Justice O'Donnell indicated, I don't think there's any real law to be written by that. You know, it seems like an error. I might agree with you. The Court of Appeals was wrong that this person was. There was plenty of identity evidence in the case. So I might agree with your argument that the Court of Appeals went off the rails, but it seems that's just fact specific to this case. And how is it of general application to the citizens of Ohio that the 8th District made a mistake here?
We discussed that, Your Honor, and I believe that what we need from this court is a definitive statement that that if a defendant is in court and the circumstances of the trial show that the defendant is indeed the person about whom the witnesses are testifying, that evidence is sufficient, that there does not have to be an in-court identification by the victim. Now, you say, well, the Court of Appeals made that statement in its opinion, and it did, but it takes more than merely stating the content, the words in a law. You have to apply the facts to that law, and here they didn't. They didn't do the second part. They just merely cited the law and expected that would exempt them from the requirement that they have to follow the law as well. So what they did, in essence, is create new law.
Well, we can do error correction We're going to be busy beavers if we're doing error correction on every case that ever came through the Cuyahoga County Courthouse, right?
Don't answer that.
Is it because of the nature?
Or any other appellate court, yeah.
District, Your Honor.
Is it complicated by the nature of the offenses here, the kidnapping, importuning, gross sexual imposition? Is that part of it?
The Court of Appeals included all of those, all of the convictions in its decision.
And it vacated all of them.
We did file a motion for en banc and a motion for the reconsideration because we anticipated this would be a problem, to give them an opportunity to, you know, address the issue. We were not successful. The defendant is now on the street. They filed a motion for appellate bond, which is denied by the trial court, but the Court of Appeals granted it. But we find it disturbing that the court didn't address the evidence that was set before it at trial and just went with its previous findings from Melton, which was a principled decision, and just didn't apply the evidence to its own prior holdings. And what makes it problematic, if one just looks at this case, the decision in isolation, if I were to look for a case like this in Westlaw doing research, I would never know that this defendant admitted on the record that, yeah, it was me who accompanied the female behind the pool area, identified himself, page 60 of the transcript. Prosecutor asked the defendant, who's showing the video, asked the defendant, and who is this? He said, oh, that's me. Says this on the record.
Would you agree that it might be helpful to have the method of the identification explained? I mean, the proposition here that you're saying, you start out by saying in-court identification is not required to secure a conviction, and then you go on where other circumstantial evidence exists.
Correct.
But you're not suggesting that the state does not have the burden to prove the identity of the accused, the
Absolutely
defendant.
Not. That it's, so that's it's an element of the crime.
It's the method that you're arguing about here.
You know, I'd say yes.
Does it matter that it was a bench trial rather than a jury trial?
No, I was just raising that just because Chief Justice O'Connor made the point that this is not part of the record, but I spoke to the prosecutor. I know, you know, what was behind her decisions and not asking that pointed question to minor females in the courtroom.
Counsel, don't we have a problem now that we're here today? It's being suggested that maybe the case shouldn't be before the Supreme Court, but if we were to adopt that policy, now we have a conviction from Cuyahoga County that they would like to have appealed on the issues of kidnapping and imposition and other things. That's never happened, has it?
That's correct.
So doesn't this matter have to go back as a matter of policy to the, if we were to find that the identification was all right, doesn't this have to go back to the 8th District?
Yes.
To finish their job?
That would be what I surmise, Your Honor, because I don't think that the job has been finished. I don't think that they've had an opportunity to address the issues that were raised by defense counsel on appeal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel?
Madam Chief Justice, Justices, Your Honors, may it please the Court, Paul Kuzmans, Cuyahoga County Public Defender's Office, on behalf of James Tate. And in response to what my colleague at the Prosecutor's Office has said, this is not a case that transcends error correction. It's simply not. We just heard the whole entire 15-minute argument or 12-minute argument, and it focused exclusively on the facts that were either omitted from the opinion down below or the facts that the state believes were not considered down below. There's been no argument so far regarding the proposed proposition of law. And that's important because that's what this court does. This court, as obviously, sits to settle the law, not to settle facts. And there is no law in dispute. The law that is proposed by the state is agreed to here by the defense. We agree that that's the law. It's a law that's been...
Was the defendant identified in court, and did he admit that he was the individual who perpetrated this offense or not?
He was not identified in court, Your Honor. And he...
Did he admit that he was the individual in the video?
He admitted that he propositioned a young lady. He did not admit that he propositioned necessarily this young lady.
Did the police officer identify him as the individual outside the library that evening?
Yes, there is. Yes, there is two officers that testified in this case, and Neef, I believe, did testify that he saw my client speaking with a young lady out front, and I believe speaking
with
Brianna
out front. Well, counsel, it's more complicated than that. He gave his business card to the young lady. She gave it to the police officer. Euclid Police called him, and he picked up the phone in the library in front of the police officer. Are you suggesting, as a matter of law, that's not an ID?
I'm not. That's not the holding of the 8th District Court below. No, and I'm not.
I don't know what the holding is of the 8th District.
The holding of the 8th District below, Your Honor, is that failure to conduct an in-court identification is not fatal to the state's case. That's the law that they cite, and that's the law that they apply.
No, I'm saying I don't know what the holding is before us today. I've read it four times. I don't know what the holding is.
I believe the holding in that case is, in this case, is that the only fact that's recited by the Court of Appeals is this issue of the police officer's identification of Mr. Tate after the fact.
Is there an exhibit in which he admitted that he propositioned the young girl?
There's a statement that he talked to a young
lady. It states Exhibit 21?
Yes, there is a statement. There is
that's
a statement
in evidence?
Correct. Yeah, and this discussion, it highlights exactly the problem that this court is faced with. We are getting muddled down, and we are talking about the facts, the ins and outs of the facts of this
case. Wouldn't that be important for us to discuss the facts and say, if you have these sorts of facts, this is what we mean by circumstantial evidence? Wouldn't that be important?
Perhaps, but that's not the issue that was brought to you by the state. The issue that was brought to you by the state.
Well, it does include where sufficient circumstantial evidence was presented at trial. So we could interpret the facts and say...
Counselor, you're talking to the microphone when you speak.
I apologize.
So we could interpret the facts and say, these are the types of identifications that would add up to circumstantial evidence.
Perhaps, but I think one of the problems with that, Your Honor, is you're going to end up slipping down a rabbit hole real quickly in terms of discussing every case. Everybody's going to come to this court with a proposition of law wondering if these four factors are present. Is that circumstantial?
Well, but we can control that.
I think that it is under control.
Well, I mean, we read a lot of briefs every week that we don't take.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that if this court were to rule in this case, I believe that this court would see many, many more. Because, again, I think that when we start issuing opinions that are this factually specific, this factually tailored.
That's up to us to control. Though.
Absolutely.
I don't think you need to worry about that.
It is.
You know, if the opinion is written and the facts that were developed at trial are highlighted and our opinion states, when you have such things as the defendant admitting that he is the person in the video that shows having sex and admits to that, you know, that's a self-proclaimed identification. And there are various other circumstantial and, I would argue, somewhat direct indicia of your identification of your client in court. There is a real reason to address that, and it's because of the way this court the 8th District wrote the opinion, and again, Mr. Price highlighted that. If this is used for authority, even in the state of Ohio, the fact that the facts are not contained and this law applied to these type of facts, it can be used for authority for something it really doesn't have the underpinnings to be authority for.
I understand the court's concern. I think one of the problems that the court finds itself in is then every time a litigant comes before this court and says that the entire trial record was not fleshed out properly, it's going to be invoking this court or this jurisdiction to overview whether or not the Court of Appeals, whether it's Cuyahoga or Summit or somewhere else, whether or not they accurately set
Actually,
forth the trial record.
Actually, we do
record.
Get jurisdictional memorandum that, as was mentioned previously, we have hundreds that are filed. And
correct.
Our record is to take less than 10% of those cases in. So there are many cases, since we're you know, court of discretion, we don't take everything that comes knocking at the door.
I agree.
This particular case is troubling because of the fact that all 12 appellate districts could cite this case and its application is erroneous.
I think that when you look at the four corners of the opinion written down below, it does leave out a fair amount of the facts that the state references and has been discussed today. I don't believe that this court opinion, standing alone within its four corners, creates any precedent. It's any different than what's out there already and what's been in effect for some time.
But your client right now is in somewhat of a peril, is he not? If this court were to reverse the Court of Appeals, your client would stand convicted of crimes for which he has been denied an appeal.
Yes, there's six assignments of error that have not gone been addressed so far. Absolutely, and there's a real fair possibility that if this court vacates the Court of Appeals, we're back here in a couple months litigating some issues again.
It's happened.
Absolutely, right, exactly, and it's a fair probability that we're back here again, whether it's us or the state bringing the appeal. We're back
and
here.
The question
again.
There is whether we take it in. Like any
Absolutely.
Other jurisdiction.
Just like
but, you
case.
Know, that right. It happens. We remand this to the Court of Appeals, and they address the sixth assignment of errors that I'm presuming
remain
unanswered.
Right, including the remainder of the first, the manifest weight and the sufficiency arguments that are raised below.
Agree with me that the 8th District, that this decision is really limited to what they said in paragraph 10. The only thing they considered is that there was not an in-court identification of the defendant by either the victim or the two friends. So if your great concern is how we write, writing something like a direct in-court testimony of a victim is not required when circumstantial evidence, including self-identification by a defendant or credible evidence of the investigative officers, demonstrates beyond a reasonable doubt that the offender is the offender charged in the crime, would satisfy your concern. Because we would be writing broadly and removing it from the narrow focus of that case.
I believe that you can craft a propositional law that is broad, and I think one of the problems with, again, crafting a broad propositional law is that it encourages sharpening the pencil tip and figuring out exactly what that broad proposition of law encompasses. And I think
targeting circumstantial evidence, not the direct testimony of just a victim. As the 8th has narrowly said, you have to have the victim.
I disagree with that characterization. They say specifically that a direct identification is not fatal. Now, in their application of the facts that they've recited, they're saying that the direct identification wasn't made, and that's a problem on the facts as they laid them out.
And the preferred method of establishing identification beyond a reasonable doubt is having the victim identify the defendant in court.
Absolutely.
And if we write a proposition that suggests that, you know, oh, don't worry about it, that's what is troubling to me. The way the proposition is stated now, it suggests that we're backtracking from the need to show identification, direct identification in court. I don't think we want to do that.
No, I agree, Justice. And I think your big problem you have is then that ends up maybe resulting in cases where more people are acquitted unnecessarily because the prosecutor feels as if they don't have to ask directly, that this is a written invitation to go ahead and not ask directly, is this the person? And I think, and this is often an argument used by prosecutors, as we see TV legal dramas spouting up, it's often common, one of the highlights of a TV drama is, do you see that person in court today? And I think that if we start writing opinions that allow the prosecutor specifically, we tailor one too specifically, and it opens that door. And I think I do want to address one thing about whether or not the troubling facts of this case are driving the opinion. And I think that what's troubling about these facts may be different for the state than what's different for me. What's troubling about this case to me is that my client was initially charged with one misdemeanor and one felony. The max he could have received was 19 months in prison. After plea negotiations broke down, and after this alleged victim story continues to evolve, they pile on where only one of the counts faces 11 years in prison, totaling he could have gone well over a quarter of a century in prison. And that's a troubling fact to me. I don't know if that's driving opinions or not, but it is a troubling fact about the case, not necessarily the nature. I'm sure it's different than what's troubling to the state about the case.
Is that part of the record before us?
It is, Your Honor. This is a case that is a reindictment of the original case number.
In the consideration of the trial court record or the appellate opinion?
The reindictment, I don't know that it was specifically recanted in the Court of Appeals.
Or the fact that your client didn't take a plea agreement, negotiations disrupted, and he went to trial.
No.
That happens all the time.
Absolutely, Judge. I think it's relatively unique that they do seek a reindictment, however. And again, that's not the issue that's before this court. Whether that there's a vindictive prosecution, obviously, is not briefed, is not before this court, wasn't raised at any level. But I would, and I just would like to say again, repeating about this court's role here, I really do believe as we've gotten bogged down a little bit into factual nuances of this case, that this is really an issue that's being asked by the state, an issue of error correction.
What was the sentence here again?
7 years, Your Honor.
7 years altogether.
Correct.
Well, it was 7 years plus seven. It was two or three sentences running concurrently.
Yes, I'm sorry. Sometimes I because it was run concurrently, right? Yes, yeah. Your Judge, there was several sentences. Since they were concurrently, the total sum is 7 years. Correct. If there are no other questions from the court, I have to thank you, Your Honors, for having us today in the University of Toledo as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Price, you've used your time. You may take 30 seconds.
I guess what I'd like to do in closing, I guess, is align Justice Lansinger's concerns that the state has any intent whatsoever to attenuate the law, that it does have to prove in court the defendant's identity as the accused's identity as the person about whom the witnesses are testifying. That has to be proven. And we agree with that. We just believe that it was in this case. That being said, the state would ask the court to reverse the 8th District's decision and return it to the Court of Appeals so that the 6 assignments of error can be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decisions. Marshall, would you please adjourn court?
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.